as the fishermen to make sure that we're going to work with them to try to help them. They're going to need to work with us from an honesty perspective to make sure that there are no games played along the way. That's very, very important.
So you'll have time to get with your North Carolina counterparts, too, before
Jack and I,
whenever you bring it back.
Yes, Mr. Commissioner.
Any other questions on that subject? Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
All right. We'll now move to item 14. Jim, you want to check back with Jack and Steve from time to time? He'll give you an update on what they're going to bring to the commission.
This item was placed on the agenda at the request of the commissioner. You'll recall last month the commission adopted some amendments to Regulation 530 to allow for a bycatch fishery for American shad in the James, York, and Rappahannock rivers. And that item came up rather late on our agenda. And as a result, most of the watermen who had wanted to be here to comment on that had to leave. And I think since then, once they were made aware of the regulation that the commission adopted, some additional concerns on their part have arisen. And so the item was put back on the agenda for them to relay their concerns to you and determine whether or not you want to make any additional changes. The primary issue is the area that the regulation pertains to, James River, York River, Rappahannock River. This is the part of the permit that's being issued to the fishermen to participate in the fishery. The ASMFC, one of their requirements for Virginia to have a shad bycatch fishery was to limit it above the first bridges on each of these rivers, James River Bridge, York River Bridge, and the Norris Bridge up on the Rappahannock. It was staff's recommendation that the bycatch area not extend up into the upper reaches of the rivers, and these are the spawning areas on the James. These three dark areas are the spawning areas. So only those areas in clear or white are the areas that are open for the bycatch fishery at the request of staff. Now, why? Well, we know that whether it's because of the geometry of the river and the fact that they narrow down as you go further upstream, or whether it's the result of a change in fish behavior, it is certain that as you move upstream, the shad is easier to catch. They're heading up there to spawn, and so they're gathering in larger groups to do that, and as a result, they're easier to catch. That is why we wanted to keep those areas off limits to the bycatch fishery. Now, one might argue that there are very few fishermen that typically fish up in those spawning areas, and the amount of fish that they would catch would be rather small. Unfortunately, we have some new information that suggests that that may not be the case if you open it up to them. When we presented this information to you last month, staff estimated that there would be between 20 and 30 people who would apply for bycatch permits and fish in these areas. As of yesterday, we have already issued 55 permits, almost double our anticipated level of effort. And 20 of those permits went to people who have no history of fishing in these areas. So one of our fears about developing a new fishery is in part coming true, in that we have people who typically have not fished in the area now seeking permits and will be fishing in the area. So you're adding new effort to the fishery that we had hoped would not occur. If it was just a matter of allowing fishermen to take fish that were already being caught year after year and were going to die when they're thrown back, then that would be fine. But when you start adding and doubling the number of people in the fishery, then we become concerned. The ELOSA task force that exists here in Virginia that guides the agencies in restoration of this fishery is opposed to opening these spawning areas. The Department of Game and Inland Fisheries is opposed, and as is VMRC staff. One thing that was pointed out by the Department of Game and Inland Fisheries is that the hatchery program that has been in existence now for more than a decade relies on the harvest of shad in these areas for hatchery purposes, and the cost of restoring the shad to these rivers is such that every fish that returns as a result of the hatchery effort is worth about $75. To a fisherman who might catch them in their nets and sell them, they're worth about $5. So there's a significant difference in the value of the fish for restoration purposes as compared to marketing purposes. So our concern is that extending the bycatch fishery into the spawning grounds will result in increased mortality and a subsequent loss of reproduction from the hatchery-produced fish. While some resident fishermen likely would take no more shad than they previously encountered in the past, others, and it appears this is going to be the case, others will adjust their practices and move to the spawning areas to increase their chances of taking shad. And as I said, we already have now 55 people who have signed up for the permits. Dr. Olney is here from VIMS, as is Tom Gunter from Department of Game and Inland Fisheries, and I believe some of the fishermen who were not able to be here last month are here today.
Any questions for Jack?
I have one.
Yes, sir. Ms. Baden?
I've fished for a long time. I've caught a lot of shad. I've seen prices drop quick. Boy, they really dropped, because last month you were estimating the fish was $15 or $20 because the price of rosettes would be so high, and now all of a sudden we're down to $5, and we haven't even caught fish yet.
The $5 came to me from fishermen who said that I had overestimated the value. And that
which is what I thought last month, that you'd overestimate. I was just wondering why there was such an abrupt change in the price of fish.
Came from the fishermen.
Thank you.
Mr. Garrison?
I think the letter from Gary Martell from DJIF says it all, and Jack mentioned the price of a restoration program of $75 a fish. Just with staff's recommendation that, I can't see any other way but to stay where we are.
The request, of course, was that, if you recall, the meeting was rather lengthy, and yeah, we had some health problems. And then I had a call from John Wyatt, and after talking with Jack, thought we ought to give him an opportunity to speak.
That's fine.
Anyone here would like to address the commission on this issue? John, is Mr. Wyatt in the house? You've heard Jack's additional comments. You want to incorporate them in your response?
I've heard Jack's comments. I don't think there's going to be a lot of people jumping into this bycatch, this big bonanza.
John
Fisher Day. I'm sorry. Mr. Pruitt and Commissioners, thank you for allowing this discussion to continue. My name is John Wyatt. I represent the Association of Independent Watermen and the Upper River Watermen's Association. I'm a little bit reluctant to say that because a lot of our people are working with the Commonwealth, with the Game Commission, with VIMS, and there's been a lot of good cooperation between the watermen and these various departments, and we've done a lot of good for the fisheries. I hate to see that good work jeopardized just because there's a little difference of opinion here. And I've talked to you, Mr. Pruitt, Mr. Travelstead, we've talked. Mr. Garrison and I talked on the phone, and I had a chance to talk to Mr. Gunner before the meeting. I hope that this doesn't become a divisive issue. That's my biggest fear. Again, a lot of good work is done been done because of our cooperation. I want to see that work continue. I want to see us all continue to be friends in the future. Back to all the people jumping in on this 10 fish per day bycatch on the spawning reaches. I'm surprised at the additional number of applications, but I don't think there's a lot of people going to jump in and make a lot of money off of 10 fish per day. It just doesn't make sense to me. The big problem is here, this thing came before the commission last month. The upper river fishermen were eliminated from the fishery. That point was never discussed in the public comments, yet it found its way into the regulation. I have a problem with something that's not proposed in the public meeting find its way into the regulation. That doesn't seem fair. That's why we have a public hearing, and so that the public comments can be incorporated into the regulation. The 10 shad per day bycatch never will be a directed fishery. If you're concerned about a directed fishery, there's one that already exists, and that's at the fall line of each of the rivers in the Commonwealth of Virginia. There's a recreational fishery there now, and I don't hear anybody complaining about that recreational fishery. I'm not complaining. I'm just bringing it to your attention to put everything in perspective. There's people standing at the fall lines on the rocks and in the boats casting and catching shad every day during the spawning season. I don't hear any complaint about that. If you're concerned about people jumping into the fishery, make it a requirement that you have a history of having fished on the spawning reaches before you issue that fisherman a permit. If you don't have a history of fishing on the spawning reaches, then you don't get a permit. That should be very simple. The effort to establish a shad bycatch was led by the Upper River watermen. Mr. Pruitt, you'll remember that Mr. Crump, I think, was the first one to bring the idea before this commission. Mm-hmm. I reminded you of it last fall. You directed Jack to take the idea to ASMFC. You sent me a copy of the letter that Jack sent to ASMFC. We always thought that the Upper River fishermen would be included in this fishery. There was never any discussion in any of the FinFish meetings or any other meeting to exclude the Upper River fishermen. Now I find that we're excluded. And that never was brought up or never considered before. The whole idea of the spawning reach and eliminating the Upper River fishermen is ridiculous. A shad caught is a shad that's not going to spawn. It doesn't matter if he's caught on a hook. It doesn't matter if he's caught in a net. It doesn't matter if he's caught in the ocean, the bay, or the lower river. No matter where that shad is caught in the spring of the year, it's not going to spawn. So why, again, are we placing an additional regulatory burden on those of us that fish on the spawning reaches? We already have a disproportionate share of regulatory burden on the spawning reaches. And that's not the way it's supposed to be. ASMFC never required that the spawning reaches be closed February and March. Their only requirement was that the spawning reaches be closed April and May as they are now. So again, Virginia has placed a burden on us that ASMFC never required. The Code of Virginia, Section 28.2-203, Paragraph 4, requires that conservation and management measures shall not discriminate among user groups. If it becomes necessary to allocate or assign fishing privileges among various user groups, such allocation shall be fair and equitable to all fishermen. This is not being fair and equitable to those of us that fish on the upper rivers. It's another regulatory burden that we've got to put up with. there's so many regulations on the book now, especially pertaining to the upriver fishermen. I feel like I need to get an attorney to explain them all to me before I go out on river to fish. I mean, there's time of year restrictions, gill net size restrictions. It's just hard to keep up with all of it. The shad we're asking for is shad that we're going to catch as a bycatch. When we fish for rockfish, the shad are going to get in our nets. In most cases, they're going to be dead or so weak that when we throw them back, they're going to be dead when we throw them back. This whole thing was brought about as a way to eliminate waste in the resource. The shad are going to be caught. No matter what we do here today, the shad are going to be caught. The shad are going to be killed. The shad are going to be thrown back dead to do no one any good. All we're asking for is to be allowed to keep the shad that we catch as a bycatch in our striped bass fishery. We're not talking about a lot of fish. We don't catch a lot of fish as we fish for rockfish. I fished 2 weeks in February. I didn't catch any. If I fish the month of March, I may catch 20, 30 shad. That's all I'm asking to be allowed to keep is 20 or 30 shad that are going to waste. They're being thrown back dead. It doesn't make any sense. I think we need to correct a wrong that was done at the last meeting. We need to include the upper rivers in this fishery. Let's eliminate the waste. It's not about catching additional fish. The catch is not going to go up because of this. We're just going to eliminate the waste. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Anyone else want to speak to the commission on this issue? Okay, does the Game and Inland Fishery wish to comment beyond the letter? Or VIMS, or both?
Mr. Pruitt, John Olney from VIMS, but the one point that Jack Travelstead did not mention in his presentation, but I think it was in the staff report, is that air monitoring data, that is the monitoring that VIMS does downriver, and the monitoring that Game and Inland Fish does upriver, shows that the prevalence of hatchery fish is higher as you proceed upriver. So in 10 fish caught in the lower James River, for example, in the bycatch area, 2 to 3 of those fish have a high probability of being hatchery. But on the spawning areas in the James River, 8 or 9 of those 10 fish are likely to be hatchery fish. So that's part of the concern by Game and Inland Fisheries relative to their hatchery restoration program.
Does that same principle apply to that recreational fishery at the fall line?
Tom can address that. The same principle applies, but those fish are released at hatchery. Yes. It's a no-take. The recreational fishery is a no-take fishery.
Tom, does that do any damage to them?
Tom Gunner, fisheries biologist, the Virginia Department of Game and Inland Fisheries. There is some indication that fish that are hooked or caught do tend to down migrate in the river systems. That's based on some telemetry studies that have been done throughout the whole East Coast. But I would say that a great deal of the fish that are caught are not killed as a result of that. Of course, we handle quite a few fish with the broodstock collections on the Pamunkey. And in fact, probably about 3/4 of the fish that we handle are green fish or fish that are not in spawning condition and are released. And we do see quite a few of those fish later on in the season as we begin the spawning process. So I feel like a high percentage of those fish do survive, and I think John has had the same experience with captured fish.
Is there a regulation? Do you all have a regulation on those? On that
catch and release only.
Catch and release only.
And that includes the hickory shad up above the 14th Street Bridge, as well as the American shad, of course, which the state has a total moratorium on them at present. And just to give you an idea of how many fish may be there, in 2002, we conducted a creel survey in the 8-mile section of the Fall on the James River, and we estimate about 8,300 American shad were caught within that hook and line fishery, which was the number three species being caught, hickory shad being first, white perch being second, and American shad. And had it been 10 years in the past, you wouldn't have seen those kinds of results.
Thank you. Any other questions for anyone?
Mr. Chairman. I have a question. I have a question for Mr. Travelstead, actually.
Okay. Thank you, Tom.
Take that. Thank
you.
Jack, thank you. Is part of your calculus here that if we allow this to go up into the spawning reaches, that it will somehow jeopardize the continued prosecution of this bycatch fishery at the ASMFC level? I mean, is that a factor in your analysis?
That's definitely part of it. I think we're going to have a very difficult time convincing ASMFC to approve anything next year.
And the reason including what we have already.
The reason I say that is we were able to get what you have approved through the management board without any technical review. Our original proposal, as you know, was for a statewide bycatch allowance. That went through technical review and was defeated. Then when it came before the management board as a defeated proposal, I was able to modify it, and they approved the modification, but they did so without any technical review. It has since gone through technical review, and there have been a lot of concerns expressed about it, but they were, I think, willing to let it go forward because of all the data collection that is surrounding the bycatch fishery. But I'm not very optimistic for next year.
Thank you.
I'm Ms. Baden, and then Dr. Gunn.
Jack, could you tell us the approximate expenditure every year on shad projects?
On the restoration program?
On the restoration program.
We spend here about $70,000 to $80,000.
I mean,
state
do you
year,
have an idea statewide? All right.
You're probably.
But I was just doing some calculations with $75 a fish, and it's 80 some hundred fish that are hooked and released at the fall line. So that's well over $600,000 at $75 a fish just for what's hooked and released. So evidently, almost everyone that are provided by the restoration program end up hooked and released. If you want to go mathematical, I mean, I don't know how they can drive at a $75 price tag unless they're willing to concede that every fish that the restoration program provides gets hooked and released at the fall line. It's the only way you can condone those numbers you just came up with.
Dr. Jones.
I have to redo my calculations to take in Ernie's scenario. And if you wait a minute, I can probably do that for you. I looked for every 10 fish. If, in fact, the price of a fish is, and I made it $70, and there are 3 out of 10 caught, that's a net loss to the state of $210 for every 10 fish in net reach. The value to society of fish caught, ex-vessel prices, which clearly aren't the total value to society, for those 10 fish caught are 10 times 5, $50. And so for every 10 fish that are harvested out of that reach, there's a net loss to society in the order of $170. And I can do that. That's per 10 fish. So $17 per fish net loss to the public trust, to society as a whole.
Anyone else?
Yes, sir. What happens to the Pamunkey and Mapanai shad? Didn't that not counted in all this? That the Indians, what they raised?
That's an additional part of the restoration program.
Yeah.
We do provide some funding. We provide $15,000 to each tribal government for their efforts, and they have their own additional expenses that they meet.
We were doing all this counting a while ago. Didn't anybody say anything about those two hackers?
Right. They're very much involved in the restoration program. on those two rivers.
Tell me about these 55 additional fishermen. I don't understand that. Was it that many different rock fishermen going up there?
No, only 20 of them are new to that area. There are 55 total who have received their bycatch permits. The regulation requires them to call in and receive a permit.
No, 55 can have 10
per vessel.
10 per vessel.
Per day or per trip.
But in the spawning area, there's no one.
Correct.
All right. Anyone else? Mr. Schick?
What about the suggestion of people who have history in the fishery in that region be able to participate? You know, I don't understand why these 20 have jumped into the market. You know, is it would that be something that would be a compromise that would work out, or do you see a problem with that coming down the road when we have to go to the Atlantic Fisheries Commission?
I'm just concerned about the harvest of hatchery-produced fish up on the spawning grounds. Mm-hmm. You have such a high probability of impacting the program. On the one hand, you have the state spending hundreds of thousands of dollars putting fish into the river and hoping, I mean, they're being put in as larvae or fry. You're waiting 4 or 5 years for them to come back as adults to spawn. And now, on the other hand, you're going to allow fishermen to take them away before they have a chance to spawn. So, you know, it's just a hard balancing act there.
All right. Well, the commission took action at the last meeting, and we've heard the additional information today. I'll hold the floors open for any type of action. Mr. Bowden?
I'm under the exact same impression that Mr. Wyatt was. When we discussed stuff at Finfish, it was brought to us by the upriver fishermen. It was discussed as a problem by the upriver fishermen. That's where we took action, was to help eliminate waste in the fishery for the upriver fishermen. And now it's completely changed. We probably need limited entry, but I'm going to tell you how the permitting process works. Everybody's going to get a permit that can get one because they're afraid they'll be shut out in the future if they need one. And that's because of actions taken by the commission over the last 15 years, mostly in the blue crab fishery. So you have people get permits that have no intentions ever to use them. I agree some of these people should not have a permit. They don't have any kind of historical presence in the fishery whatsoever, and that should be taken into consideration. But to lock out the very people that we were trying to help, and, you know, who makes no difference whose numbers you use. If you use $17, which I think is probably a lot more appropriate than $75.
$17 and 50 cents per fish.
Per fish. Well, they were saying $75 per fish, so yours is a little better than 20%. But, you know, she's talking about a net loss of $17, and I just spoke to her and said I paid $49,000 income tax, and I considered all that a net loss last year because, you know, I didn't receive any special treatment for it. I think that we need to amend it, and we ought to amend it to allow the upriver fishermen to have their bycatch, but we ought to do it at the price of you had to have an historical presence in the fishery to have a bycatch permit, period. The amount of fish that will be caught will be insignificant. It's going to be so low down on the fishing mortality rates, it's going to be insignificant. Now, I definitely understand the problem because it's hatchery-raised fish and we have additional money in them.
How many people are you talking about?
Well, historically, Jack says 30-some people. Was it that many in the reaches that historically fished? I'm just taking Jack's numbers. Some of these people are the same people. You're not going to have additional people because probably the people upriver have got permits now.
The moratorium has been in effect since 94. So I don't know. What do? Go back to prior to 1994? And
I think you could go. It's in the striped bass fishery. We know who traditionally fished in those areas in the striped bass fishery. since the permitting process. You have to fill out the location you fish, and if you don't fall within those boundaries, you don't get a permit. If you've never fished in them or you haven't made significant effort in those areas, we would be causing an influx of people into the fishery, which we don't want to do. But to lock out the people who were having the problem initially just wouldn't be right.
All right. I'm going to let Kelly say something there in a minute.
Kelly Place. I'm a waterman. I just want to make one possible suggestion to get out of this quandary without any loss of fish or any loss of data. It does seem unfortunate, like Ernie alluded to have the very half dozen or so guys up the upriver that have been asking and pushing for this, which have in fact shared a disproportionate amount of the regulatory burden. It does seem particularly cruel that after all these years of trying to get this, that they're eliminated. Let me just suggest that what few fish, I'll say those half dozen or so people would catch, are far superseded in number by the amount of fish that the Game Department and Fish and Wildlife and maybe VMRC collect as sampling and kill those fish because they need age and growth and everything else. Would it be possible to have just those handful of permittees be able to fish in the upriver under the caveat or have them sell their fish to the Game Department or whoever collects those samplings? It seems that it would save those agencies like Fish and Wildlife and the Game Department the money that they have to spend going out and collecting these fish for sampling. The watermen would not, there wouldn't be many fish caught, but those that were caught wouldn't have to be wasted. The agencies would get their data, and it would be a very limited permit up there, and I don't think you would have anything different than where the regulation is now, except for that these few fish that these half dozen people would catch would be recorded for science. I think it's a save situation with not only money, but as far as equity, too. One last thing, as far as the 55 permits that have been issued for the shad bycatch, I can say that as we're doing our bycatch assessment and sturgeon restoration program on the James, our boat has 4 of those permits. We're certainly not targeting shad. We did happen to catch 2 shad after fishing a whole bunch of days, and I called Dr. Olney's office. I'm happy to any other shad that we catch to give them to him for free. But like Ernie said, when you issue these permits, just because you have a rush of 55 people to get these permits, when you've got a free permit, people that have no intention of using them will come and get them. 4 of them are on our boat, and we're not after shad. So I don't want to upset anyone's cart here, but it does seem there's a way out that would save the respective agencies money, save the fishermen from having to waste fish, and keep this data that could be valuable from being going out the window. And I'm just suggesting a very restricted 4 to 6 people that have these histories in the upriver that have worked so hard for so long to get this bycatch. If it helps, I'll give up my shad permit. I just did that so I could provide fish to science during our study. Thanks.
Thank you, Kelly. All right. You've heard the request and you've heard the report from staff and matters before the commission.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Garrison.
I would have to put all confidence and credence in the letter from Gary Martell for the Department of Game and Indian Fisheries. When Gary says $75 a fish, I would base my boat or feedings on that figure. Thank you.
All right. What do you want to do? Mr. Robbins.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Too late. There's been a lot of good discussion on this matter today. I'm sensitive to keeping the closed areas closed to the extent that they serve a management purpose, and it sounds like, from what we've heard, they do. I think there is significance to these areas as sanctuaries or as spawning areas. At the same time, I'm sympathetic to the equity issues that have been raised. I mean, I don't think that the code that was referenced precludes the use of MPAs or sanctuaries at all, but I am sensitive to the fact that there are fishermen that worked up there that had histories, and that's partly why this request was brought. And I wonder if it would be appropriate to leave the area closed for right now, but refer this matter back to FMAC for further review to see if we could either put together a combination or take more of a limited entry view of the permits and or consider the possible development of a scientific permit within those closed areas.
Jack, could you comment to Mr. Robin?
We could certainly take it back to the advisory committee and discuss.
All right, is that a motion?
Well, in that case, Mr. Chairman, I would move that we leave the area closed for the time being, but refer the matter back to FMAC for further consideration and discussion of permit eligibility and the possible development of a scientific permit for the closed areas.
Is there a second to that motion? Seconded by Dr. Jones. Further discussion to the motion? All in favor say aye.
Further discussion.
I'm sorry.
This has been in front of FinFish for years. I don't know how many. We'll just say years. I won't say I was a small child because I never was a small child, but it's been there for a significant period of time. And the whole time FMAC discussed it, it was to help the problem upriver. It was never to help any other problem. It was the problem upriver. And as Jack said earlier, this may be a one-year thing. I think Kelly has a very good idea. And I'm sure some of the people upriver would probably take less than 10 fish. But by the time we would go through FMAC and come back, the season's over.
This year.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you know,
this year.
It's over, period. So there goes another year when we've already been 5 or 6 years. You can either give me credit or blame that, you know, I was the biggest shad fisherman in state of Virginia, and the last 2 years I've let an awful lot of fish go by because I'm not allowed to have any. So maybe I'm contributing enough for to let the people upriver catch something, and I'm more than glad to do that. So I can't support another year of study because, you know, you study something 5 or 6 years or longer is long enough. And I feel like, you know, most of the commercial interest on FMAC is going to feel the same way. So I cannot support Rick's motion.
All right. Mr. Robbins?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would just point out that, I mean, we're talking about a year lost. But, in fact, during that year, you've already got 55 permit holders that are going to be actively able to keep some bycatch during the period. And it sounds like some of those are the fishermen up the river, but they won't be able to keep it right in that sanctuary area.
That may influence ASMFC some too.
Well, I guess that's a concern.
What you're proposing. Any other discussion to the motion? All in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
Yeah. All right. All in favor of the motion, raise your right hand. 1, 2, 3. All opposed, raise your right hand. 1, 2, 3.
It's you.
It's you.
Chairman.
It's you.
It's been a while.
There you go. It's
been a while.
I'm opposed to the motion because it doesn't do anything, but it doesn't address the issue here. It takes too long. So I vote a no to the motion. So in absence of any other motion, the regulation stands. Mr. Badden?
I'd like to make a motion to, we know who historically fished
wait,
in that area.
Excuse me just a minute.
I am on the prevailing side.
He is the prevailing side.
I voted against it and it failed.
All right. Mr. Bowden, you're on the prevailing side.
I thought I was. One or a few times in my life. I'd like to.
Wait a minute. You disagree with that, Wilford?
Let me hear his motion first.
And I did.
You voted in favor.
Right. Evidently, I wasn't aware of some of the circumstances. And I did vote in favor of the motion last month. Am I all right now, Wilford?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Roberts, I'm going to rule. The chair is going to rule that you have the floor.
All right. What I would like to see, we know who historically fished in that area. I think we can ascertain the number of people relatively quickly. And I think we can issue a special permit for that area for the upriver fishermen. And we can limit the number to no more than 10 individuals.
Can we do that? Is the question.
I think it's less than 10 individuals that actually fish in that area.
Be more now.
When you say we historically know, or we know who historically fished in the area.
Right, through mandatory reporting.
Well, fished for what?
It would be striped bass. They're asking for this bycatch in the striped bass fishery is what they're asking for the bycatch in, so it would have to be the striped bass fishery.
So if you have evidence through mandatory reporting of having harvested shad in the harvested striped bass in the spawning area, you would be eligible for
a permit.
A special
and we really don't have to limit the number. That was a suggestion because it's going to be less than 10. I'm sure Mr. White could address that a lot more so than I ever could.
Well,
that's my motion anyway, that we limited to people who's had historical rockfish landings in that area.
What years? What history? Any particular set of years? Or?
Well, we know it's from 94 on. We've had mandatory reporting. So we can say, we can pick a number out of those four, out of that year.
94 to 2005.
And generally what we've done in the past has been 3 years during that period that you've had significant landings, more than one fish.
I think that before we entertain a motion, that we need more specific information on mandatory reporting. I think we need staff to do some research, and we'll move this item to the end of the agenda. Otherwise, you're not going to know what you're voting on.
That's right.
I agree with that.
And somebody's going to come in here tomorrow and say, I was left off. It's got to be solid if we're going to do it. I'm assuming if it passes. I don't know, but I'm just assuming. We're only talking about 1 month of fishing, by the way.
You got 55 so far. What case you getting 500?
No, 55, not above.
I say you got 55 so far downriver.
That's correct.
What's going to keep you from getting hundreds up the river? We don't know how many people
up there. Mr. O'Reilly.
Just want to mention one complication with mandatory reporting, and that is when you look at the map, a lot of the upper areas coincide with a larger reporting area. So that reporting area can be partly in these darkened areas, partly in the light, except for the Pamunkey and Mattapani. They would be discrete water areas to show who actually fished there. Once you get to the James and the Rappahannock, it's not the case. There's an overlap. So that could broaden the number of participants. So it really is needed to look at that first.
Right. Okay. And if you'll, I don't know how you're going to do it, Jack, and do the rest of the agenda. Maybe you can split the staff up.
Delegate power.
All right. So now we'll move. We'll now move to item 15. And I think we can. Well, I don't want to tell you how to make this report, Rob, but it seems like to me the bottom line here is pretty simple. What we're going to have the hearing on.
This particular item?
Mm-hmm.
Very simple. We're revising the quota for 2006. It's an increase of 49,475 pounds, and if you look at the staff recommendation,